All right, I think we'll get started here. I greet you this afternoon in the name of Jesus, the embodiment of truth and wisdom. And I've been impressed with how much we need God's truth and God's wisdom as we serve others, and specifically as it relates to finding and keeping teachers. I'm going to do just a little bit of reminiscing here. When we sing that song of "Oh, for a Thousand Tongues to Sing," we went to a teacher's meeting in Seattle. We used to go to teacher's meetings in Seattle. It was sponsored by ACSI. And there were 3,000 teachers there. And we sang that song. That was impressive. For 3,000 people to be singing "Over a Thousand Tongues to Sing." All right. Have you ever felt that it wouldn't be so bad to be on the school board if it just wasn't for this business of hiring teachers? After serving on the board myself for many years, I suppose that's one of the things that always remained a challenge. Too many times we were up against it, so to speak. And I think you would agree with me that it's not a good feeling. Not a good feeling. There's some handouts there, if you care for some handouts. Someone said this morning that there were 3 schools that are still looking for teachers. I know our school is, and I know a school in Ohio that's still looking for 2 teachers yet. So, yeah, it's a challenge. Well, this afternoon, I don't come to you with a 1, 2, 3. If you do this and you do that, you'll keep your teachers forever. Now, if you've had any experience in this, you know that if I told you that, it wouldn't be true, because experience teaches us differently. And perhaps you don't want to keep them forever anyway. But we really would like to keep the teachers that we really think ought to keep teaching. I think we would agree on that. Now, we would agree that hiring teachers is a bit different from hiring someone to plow a field or to pound nails. We appreciate character in hired help. But a teacher has an influence that pounding nails or sacking off seeds simply does not have. And history tells us over and over that children and youth are directly influenced by their environment, and they will be more influenced by that than they will be influenced, than they will be influential in their environment. So hiring teachers is a multifaceted issue. So that's why it's important that board members, first of all — I'm talking to board members mostly here today, I think — and secondly, the teachers they hire understand some very basic principles as it relates to education. The 3 principles of education are, this is very brief, 1, an imparting of information. It's an imparting of information. I think we all understand that. But education also includes, 2, the training into a specific lifestyle. It's much more than learning just 1 plus 1. And if you don't think so, look around at what's happening in the public school system, what it has produced. It's produced a very ungodly lifestyle. And 3, education is the communication of an attitude toward life. I read in the paper recently that the 10th leading cause of death in the United States is suicide. The 10th leading cause of death is suicide. In 2016 alone, there were close to 45,000 suicides. In the 15 to 34 age bracket, suicide is the 2nd leading cause of death. That's something to think about. It's sobering. And that's what I'm talking about here in relation to the last point. It's a communication of an attitude toward life. Christian education produces an attitude toward life that, with God, we can make it and not shoot ourselves. All right, so what is our responsibility as boards as it relates to keeping our teachers on the merry-go-round? I hope we can keep the merry-go-round going around fast enough this afternoon that you won't fall asleep either. All right, I think, first of all, we should be convinced of the need for the benefits of the Christian school. In the training of our children, we need to be convinced that the school we are serving is an integral part of passing on the faith. And a part of the teaching program of the church, remember points number 2 and 3 that I made at the beginning. What education is, it's training into a specific lifestyle and communication of an attitude toward life. If we as board members are not convinced of that, how can we expect to keep our teachers? And I think as we look at this subject, I think we need to look inward first. I don't think we should be looking at the teachers as much as we should be looking at ourselves. So I believe that a qualified school board helps to maintain and keep good teachers. Now, with this in view, an effective board will seek to hire qualified teachers. And I realize that we could talk a long time about that, but I think that there is a greater possibility of keeping our teachers if they are qualified in the first place. So let's start there. What are the marks of a qualified teacher? And again, we're just briefly looking at some of these things. Number one is leadership. So what kind of leadership? Well, first of all, spiritual leadership. Let me ask you the question. Who sets the spiritual tone for the school? Do you as a board member set the spiritual tone for the school? I think we have to admit we don't. Basically don't. It's the teacher. So the teacher must be spiritually sound in faith and example. Number two, there must be proper philosophical leadership. By that, I mean they must have a proper view of God. They must have a proper view of the Bible, proper view of the world. And their educational objectives must proceed from that viewpoint. It has been said that as we look upon life, so we teach. Number three, let's not forget academic leadership. In order to get a good Christian education, there should not be an academic penalty. And I appreciate what was shared this morning in the curriculum buffet. There should not be an academic penalty just because we have a Christian school. In fact, I think our standards should exceed that of the public school. And by and large, they do. And then also, as we look at teachers, hiring teachers, there needs to be a willingness to accept direction and reproof. The teacher needs a soft heart, but not a stiff neck. Thirdly, a good teacher needs to be disciplined. I believe that a teacher's self-discipline carries over into how effective they are in the discipline in the school. There should be ability to command respect in a natural way, and I realize that's a big subject in itself, but I think there's a side there that's pretty important. There should be an ability to command respect in a natural way. Number four, a teacher needs a certain degree of maturity. Let's not hire teachers on the basis of trying to see if we can help them grow up. I just don't think that's right. The school is not for teaching teachers, but it is for teachers to be teaching school. Now, I've seen teachers grow up, in quotes, by teaching school, but I think there must be a certain degree of maturity there before they are hired. And along with this, I want to add that you as board members can send teachers to WFTI too, and perhaps pay their way, and teachers training like we had last week here, good thing to pay their way. There was one that attended that last week that their board not only paid their way, but they paid their lost wages as well. And I think that's good. I'm going to open it up right here. Do you have any thoughts or questions before we go any further? Before we look at some other ways in which we can keep the teacher on the merry-go-round. Something you'd like to add or thought you'd like to share? I'm not planning to do all the talking here, so be prepared. Yes?
With this certain degree of maturity, what's the general feeling as far as our teachers needing being able to be excused to attend youth Bible school in America?
Okay.
Or should they be mature enough they're beyond that?
Okay, good question. If you teach at our school, you can't go to Bible school. Is that what we say? Any thoughts?
Are you into or not you need to go to Bible school?
Well, I know, but
we had an interesting experience with that. 2 years ago, we had a young teacher, and we sent her to Bible school. And then last year, we got a very experienced teacher that's teaching again this year, and her personal policy is that she doesn't go to Bible school if she's teaching school.
Okay, thank you for that. Are you going to say something else? Any other thoughts on that? Seems to me it would vary whether, like you say, a young teacher that would like to have the opportunity to go to Bible school, and perhaps you hired her in the last part of August, and you'd really like her to teach, but we will make some concessions because we need a teacher. Any other thoughts?
I think a teacher faces a certain amount of burnout themselves, that a little break like that might benefit the rest of the year. We've actually felt that it has been a profitable thing to give them a little bit of being able to go and receive teaching, because they teach every day. There's something about just that break can make a better teacher.
And you know what? It gives an opportunity for the board member to come in and teach for them. Jonathan, were you going to say something?
Yeah, this would not be a situation where the board was coming in to teach, but many of the times that I've been on the teaching staff and somebody, another teacher went to Bible school, I've seen the messiness that it creates to have a substitute come in for 3 weeks. And I personally, as a teacher, I kind of resent someone going to Bible school. I don't resent them going to Bible school for the purpose of, you know, good Bible school, but for what it does for a classroom, I find some resentment in that leaving. Now, coupled with your idea of work coming in, now we have a win.
I know I have filled in already in the past, but okay, anything else on that? Or any other thought? All right, let's go to number 3. I believe that they should be given a, what kind of wage? Tell me. Put your word in there. Ample? Decent?
Reasonable.
Okay. And I think also along with that, we need to let them know that we will reimburse them for school supplies that they buy. What are the excuses for not paying a decent wage? What excuses have you heard?
It should be looked at as a service.
Okay, could be looked at as a service or as voluntary. Yeah, right, voluntary service or that type of thing. Okay. What are some excuses that you have heard?
They don't get wages on the mission field where they go a lot of times, so why can't they do that here?
Okay. They don't get wages on the mission field?
Can't afford it.
Okay, can't afford it. That's one thing I was going to bring out, is maybe we don't say it out loud, but it takes a toll on our lifestyle. We don't like to say that. But I come back with a question, how much are we willing to sacrifice? Do we really believe that one soul is worth more than the whole world? Do we really believe that? Do we act like that? Do we need to keep, another thing I was going to say with that too is that if we pay them too much, that's an excuse that people will say we shouldn't pay them too much, it'll just be a job. Well, I think any teacher that has the well-being of their students in mind is not going to look at this as just a job. I really feel that way. But do we need to keep our teachers' wages at a poverty level so they will be kept humble? I don't think so. Recently, I heard of an experienced older lady who was doing an excellent job of teaching, but she declined to teach. And you know why she declined to teach? She wasn't getting paid enough to live on. I think that's a shame. The meager wage she was receiving was not enough to make a living. Maybe, I think it was Brother Jonathan and I were talking about this, that maybe we should be willing to forgo that latte in order that we can put another $5 in the offering. And why don't you share that thought that you shared about that?
If everybody would, if all the wagers in the congregation would put $5 a week more in the teacher wage, that aggregate amount is actually pretty amazing. We were considering a teacher wage increase in Brethren's meeting at one point, and that's what it would have equaled. That would have been easily enough to fund that proposed teacher wage, but there was a fair amount of resistance to it. That was a little hard for me to accept.
So maybe we should ask ourselves a question. Are we willing to forego the latte so we can support our teachers? All right, anything else on that? One of the ways is in relation to supplies is to tell them that you want a list of the supplies. And generally, teachers are very conscientious about that. They're very willing to share the list, and you know what's being bought, and they're very conscious of not wasting money for the school. Okay, anything else on point number three? Number four, boards should handle sensitive issues in a discreet manner. And of course, this applies to teachers as well. But often problems involve both the student and the parent. And you as a teacher, well, I say you, but teachers get caught in the middle of that. Some of these things, I believe, do not need to go beyond the board. At the most, the ministry, I mean, if they're involved. And I've known situations, and I don't remember what the issues were anymore, but I've known situations where something was discussed one evening at a board member, at a board meeting, and the next morning it was brought to school by one of the board member's children. That's a no-no. That's really a no-no. It's not that we're trying to hide things, not that we're trying to cover up issues, but not everyone needs to know everything in order for a problem to be resolved. And you as a board we need to handle those issues set in a sensitive way, discreet way. Number five, boards should inform their teachers of the basic policies of the school. You say, well, we have a handbook. We don't really need to go over those things. And maybe you don't need to go over them in detail. It's very helpful to have a handbook, but that does not release you from that function of the board. A handbook does not necessarily spell out every jot and tittle. And when there are issues that arise concerning policy, please consider the perspective of the teacher. I think we as boards need to be sensitive to that, that we consider the perspective of the teacher you hired, because they might have a greater understanding of the issue than what you do. It's very possible. Now, that does not mean that we allow ourselves to be pushed around by some strong-minded, opinionated teacher. But let's remember that neither the teacher, nor the board, nor an individual board member, I should say, has the authority to establish school policy on their own. At least it should not be that way. There are steps in the line of authority that need to be followed. All right, I'm ready for number six, but maybe somebody has something they'd like to add or share.
Remember one thing I read, I think it was when we were writing the constitution for our school, and I saw this in some other constitution from some other school, but on number four about boards handling sensitive issues, it says that something about issues should not be discussed with, or should only be discussed with people who are part of the problem or part of the solution. It's a fairly narrow field.
That's a good point. That's why a lot of problems should be handled in that way. Yes, thank you for that. Anything else? All right, number six, and maybe this goes along with what I've already said, but boards should be the shock absorber between the school and the parents. What if there's a problem that can't be resolved between the teacher and the student? Now, it's not necessarily improper for a teacher to share a problem with the parent that they're having with their student, their child. In fact, it's probably where it should begin. However, what if we do that and it doesn't produce the desired results? So what happens then? You know what happens then. It comes to the board. Hopefully, from a more objective viewpoint, the board can sort it out and decide what is necessary and not necessary to share with the parent. The point I'm making here is that the teacher should not be the shock absorber. You as a board should be the shock absorber and bear the results of unresolved issues. In other words, if there are issues that are not resolved, you as a board need to be the, you need to absorb that, not the teacher. That should not be put upon the teacher. The board should be the shock absorber that makes the tough decision and makes themselves responsible to make sure those decisions are actually carried out. Number seven, board should take the initiative. Notice I said initiative in keeping the school grounds and facilities in good repair. The teacher should not be like the nagging housewife that has to tell her husband 100 times that this faucet is dripping before it's repaired. And I think this is all in keeping with keeping our teachers. It's one way you can show that you care about the school. In my observation of about a quarter century on the board, I think some board members are more aptly suited to that kind of work. It's a little bit like it is in the church. The deacon does some work that some of the other ministry does not do, and some board members are more aptly suited. The chairman does not have to do all those things. He can delegate some of those responsibilities. It's just part of administration. Number eight, boards should be united in their goals and aims. Believe me, a teacher will find that out pretty quick if a board is not united in their goals and aims. A divided board is like a divided ministry, and it takes a willingness to give and take. I remember one instance, quite a number of years ago, in which I felt very strongly about a certain issue. And I said about all I could say, but guess what? They didn't listen to me. The vote went the other way. Was I right? Were they wrong? Were they right and I was wrong? You know, it really doesn't matter. The important thing was is that I supported that decision. That's what was important. On the other hand, I remember more than once, and I'm not saying this to downgrade anyone, but I remember more than once a board member going ahead with things without consulting the rest. And it does not give a very good feeling within the board. And teachers can pick up on those things. You know, maybe their motive was completely right. It probably was. I'm not judging their motives. But it does not bring about a productivity that's possible with a united board. Let's make sure we work together. Number nine, along with the above point, I think it's ideal, perhaps not always possible, for at least some of the board members to have children in school. It brings that feeling of being personally involved. This is going to affect my children. I really do care about what's going to happen here. Now, I suppose that can be taken too far because it isn't just about my children. It's about everyone's children. But a mix of older and younger members on the board can be beneficial to bring balance. And your teachers are going to appreciate that. And hopefully that's one more thing that can help to keep them on the merry-go-round. All right, I'm going to stop here. Any more thoughts, questions that you might have? Okay, thank you for that. I would have served on the board before I had children and while I had children and then while they were out of school and some were teaching. So I got it from all the perspectives, I guess. Anything else? Okay, number 10. Hire what soon enough? All right, hire teachers soon enough. Usually teachers are asked for the next year in December or January or whatever your policy is. And if they claim to have fallen off the merry-go-round, don't just hope that they will turn around and say yes, then we better start looking. We better start looking right away for someone to take the place of the one that fell off. You see, we need to wring our hands in February, not August. And I realize I'm not critical of boards that are still searching for teachers because we've been there. I know what that's like. But I say that because we need to realize how fast time goes. Suddenly it's end of May, and we don't have a teacher for next year, and the harvest is past, and lo, there are no teachers. Number 11, know enough about the curriculum so that you can talk knowledgeably about it. And again, I appreciated what was shared this morning in the curriculum buffet. Now, I don't think that we have to know the curriculum as well as the teacher. I think that's setting a pretty high requirement to say that we need to know as much about the books as our teachers do. But my point I'm making is that we need to be interested and informed about what kind of books our children are learning out of. We need to be interested and informed. I suppose in the years that I've served on the board, this is one of the frustrations that I experienced was, well, I guess I'll just say it bluntly, the lack of interest the board showed in the curriculum. You know, as long as someone took care of it, that was fine with them. Well, guess who took care of it? It usually ended up on my lap. At the least, I think the board should be interested enough to be able to discuss the curriculum with enough knowledge that it can be helpful to the teacher. Is that asking too much? I see a teacher shaking his head, yeah. I don't know. I want to make a point here. We need to remember that just because we don't know much about the curriculum does not take away the responsibility of what curriculum is being used and what is being taught in our schools. I'll say that again. We need to remember that just because we don't know much about the curriculum does not take away the responsibility of what curriculum is being used and what's being taught in our schools. And I'll add here, too, that I think sometimes schools can get stuck in a rut. And I think maybe you mentioned that this morning. That's just the way we've always done it. We've always used Abaca, so that's all we're going to use. Well, times have changed. CLE has upgraded their curriculum. Broadstaff has updated their curriculum. Let's be aware of it. Let's not get stuck in a rut. And especially I'd like to encourage us to move, and I think many of us have, toward the Anabaptist-based curriculum. I think we have it. Let's use it. And I think that we can learn with CLE and Rodenstaff. It doesn't have to be Abaca. And we need to move our students away from the Protestant. I've wondered sometimes, in our school we used Abaca for a number of years. We were careful, some of the history books we didn't use. But I've wondered sometimes if there's more Protestant influence there than what we really think. I really wonder about that. All right, anything else that you'd like to share at this point? Question you might have. All right, number 12, we need to give emotional and moral support. Be there for your teachers. It's really the best kind of help we can give our teachers. Teachers should never feel that, I'm doing this all by myself. Nobody cares. They should not get that feeling. They should not feel like they're in this work alone. And I think a word of appreciation goes a long, long ways. It means so much. And it's a way to build relationships with your teachers, with those you've hired. Now, there might be some negative things we have to address at times. But let's not forget the positive. There's surely something positive we can find. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Let's never get the idea that the teacher's hired, I'm out of here. See you later. Don't get that idea. The job's just begun. That's the way it is. And when you hire someone to work for you, you just walk off and they don't know what they're supposed to do. I mean, the work's just begun. And I think we don't have to be board members to necessarily be encouragers either. The last 2 years, we kept a school teacher in our home. That's one way we can encourage too. And I wasn't on the board. But we can give a listening ear. And it's not that he dumped stuff on us, but we developed a relationship that made it easier for him to share. Of course, he knew that both my wife and I had been involved in the school for many years. But remember, you don't have to be on the board to be an encourager. Parents and other people can give encouragement. It's a church-operated school, right? We're in this together. Number 13, let's have productive school board teacher meetings. When we meet with our teachers once a month or however you do it, when we're meeting with the teachers, let's keep to the business at hand. You know, the teacher really probably doesn't care what grass seed prices are. They probably really don't care whether John Doe got a new pickup. They probably really don't care about those things. Let's keep it to the business at hand. If they want to visit after the meeting's over about those things, that's fine. That's great. It's not that we're going to talk only just about school things outside of that meeting. But teachers are busy people. They really don't need to know what the price of ryegrass is or whether John Doe got a new pickup. So my subject is not how to have effective board meetings, but let me say this, that wandering into all kinds of diverse subjects unrelated to school is not really productive. You know, I've sat in too many board meetings that lasted past midnight. And, you know, once it gets to be midnight, well, probably before then, it seems like they start getting less productive, get less accomplished. All right, number 14. We need to provide a stable church setting. And I realize that that's not necessarily in control of the board. But what teacher wants to come into a school where there's strife and division? I wouldn't. And sometimes that can happen in the course of the year and be totally unforeseen. This happened to my one son that taught in another state. During the course of the year, they had a church split, and he ended up teaching students from the split on both sides. And I think the students were told that they weren't supposed to talk about these things and so on, but still, it puts a little bit of strain on the school situation. The church, I believe that the church should be a shelter and a place of rest for the weary. Teachers get weary. They need that encouragement. We heard that something about that this morning, I think. And I believe along with that, the school should be church-supported. And I think we have moved pretty much in our circles to church-supported schools. Our school began as a patron-supported school and was that way for many years because not necessarily everyone in the church supported the school. But I think by and large, our churches have moved to church-supported schools. That's a good thing, very good thing. The school, I think, should be viewed as an arm of the church because teachers are in that process, are molding lives, and they need your help. They need the church's help in order to be effective in that. All right, maybe someone has a thought, question you'd like to share.
One of my acquaintances that taught for over 30 years said that when you see a situation where a teacher has taught that many years in the same community, which he had, he said that is more of a testimony to the supporting community and patrons and board than it actually is the teacher. And I think there's really a lot of truth in that. I think he was being modest.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I really think he was reflecting on a broader truth. I've certainly found it very difficult to teach in some situations where the things where you were talking about just simply weren't in place. But when there is that kind of teacher support, the kind of ideals that you were going across mm-hmm. here, it's compelling to come back mm-hmm. and talk to a teacher just before lunch. He said, we just have had very low teacher turnover at our school. I said, why? How so? When this isn't the case in broad circles. And he said, he thinks that a lot of it has to do with they have a very caring minister that has, over the years, taught other people to be very caring.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. Anything else?
I have one question, kind of along that line, but when you're asking a teacher, is it okay to ask somebody you know that's dating? Because you kind of assume that, you know, that's kind of a one-year deal. And I know sometimes we need teachers, so we do, but that was just a thought that I had.
Okay, do we ask dating ladies or gentlemen to be our teachers? Any thoughts?
That's probably not a teacher you're going to keep on married around. And they might get married instead.
Well, that brings me to that thought on the bottom. Is there a possibility of keeping teachers too long? Or if we wish they'd fall off the merry-go-round, but don't quite know how to ask them to get off, and then is it a negative thing necessarily to have teacher turnover? Is it totally a negative thing? Your thoughts? I don't have all the answers to that. I just talked to a teacher at lunch today that taught 1 year, took a year off, taught another year, took a year off, and I think he's taught again every other year. He said, "You can stand me up and give me as an example." is that bad? Come on.
It's not necessarily bad, but it is. I think there is a blessing when a teacher teaches more than 1 year. It gives some continuity to the school. But on the other hand, what would we do if teachers wouldn't just step in sometimes when there's a need and teach for a year? Mm-hmm. That happened. My daughter did that, and we need those too. I think we need both.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think some of this comes back to where the Lord calls us to work in His vineyard as well. Okay, any other thoughts?
One of the upshots of high teacher turnover is we have a lot of former teachers sending children to school. And that may actually be one of the reasons that we don't talk about or don't realize as far as why our schools work as well as they do, despite high teacher turnover.
Mm-hmm.
Our schools work as well as they do primarily, I think, number one, is because they're coming from disciplined,
mm-hmm.
supported homes. And having a parent that was a school teacher at one time, they aid in that whole phenomenon.
That's true. Okay, anything else?
I thought on the question about a dating school teacher, we have a dating school teacher, and he's going to get married, and so we negotiate with him what it would take for him to stay, you know, because most likely they're going to have to get paid a little more if they're going to get married and keep teaching. So maybe that goes back to the question about teacher pay. But for sure, if you want him to keep teaching, you probably have to pay more than a single man would.
All right. I think that's something to keep in mind. And I think kind of what we have done, I think, over the years is ask them what they need to keep on teaching. And isn't that pretty much the way we've done, I think? So the money part of it is not the issue. It's whether they want to really keep on teaching. Okay. Anything else?
There's a relationship between the school board and the teachers. There's probably the possibility of discernment and communication, but you know, it's a full-time job to date, it's a full-time job to teach. And, you know, sometimes not everybody can handle both jobs. And so just because one person can do it doesn't mean the next one can.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a little bit of discernment and communication, and we all want our young people to experience marriage,
mm-hmm.
and we want good teachers too. So it's, I don't know if there's an answer for that question,
mm-hmm.
that really would work for everyone.
That's right. I think some schools have the policy that they cannot begin dating until after the school is out. I mean, if they teach next year, they could maybe be dating, but but to actually begin a courtship. I blew that one because I did that myself. I started courting a lady from while she was teaching at our school, so my first marriage. Okay, anything else?
I'd be interested in hearing what some other schools are paying their teachers.
Okay.
They're paying our teacher $1,500 a month. We'd like to pay more if necessary. I'd be interested in hearing what is considered a reasonable teacher.
Okay. Is that a married person or?
No, she's a single girl.
She's a single girl. Okay, $1,500 a month just for a single girl. How many years has she taught?
At our school only, this is her second year. She's had a lot of experience before
that.
Okay. I hired a first year teacher for $1,000 a month.
$1,000.
Plus some, a little bit more for transportation.
Right.
I've always felt that we've erred on the side of not paying our teachers enough rather than paying them too much, at least in our circles. If you take minimum wage today, which is what, I don't know what it is here in California, it's about to be 12. If you take that times an 8-hour day, you're coming up with nearly $2,000 a month, and we look at that and say, wow, that's pretty. But then we come back to the fact, what's it worth to us? Mm-hmm. I mean, should it be worth more than minimum wage? And I know it can vary some on if they're married or if they're not. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we can give some place for that. But, you know, this is one thing I was going to talk about in my workshop the next one coming up, but we've been taught to be thrifty as Anabaptist people. Sometimes I think it has trickled down to places where it probably shouldn't.
Or it doesn't belong.
It's just a thought I had, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but how many of you would work for minimum wage? Mm. Not many.
I would really like to see, in our church, I'd really like to see a young man teach school. In order to pay a family enough to make it work, that takes a lot of money. We have a small church, and I don't know for sure how to work on that.
Any other thoughts?
We've been had a formula for figuring out how much we should pay a teacher, and he had where you average the wages, what the rest of the men in church are making, and that's base, and then like a first year teacher might get 65% of base, and each year by the time they get to be a third or fourth year teacher, they're getting average wage of what everybody else in churches are earning.
Yeah, I've heard where they do that, and they're the best paid teachers.
That's one thing I think it's important to keep in mind is when we're trying to sort out wages, you know, could this put some bitterness in the heart of the teacher if they feel they're getting taken advantage of? Mm-hmm. They look around and everybody can pretty well go and buy a piece of machinery that fits their needs, and it's nice, and the homes are nice, and here they are just scratching along. That's one way to lose a teacher, and just through bitterness. And then they're not even proactive in even looking at your children and helping them with their needs because they're affected by what they feel.
Maybe if we give them a food box at Christmas, that'll take care of it. I think
the thought is, are we living higher than we are for
yeah.
our teachers live?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think so too. And I think too, along with the point you made, an 8-hour day, there's not very many teachers that skimp on, I mean, that make it just an 8-hour day. It's not only that you work 8 hours or 10 hours, but you have that burden on your mind. It's more than just 8 hours. It's much more involved than that. Well, I guess it's time to quit here. I'm going to close by saying that the verse from Galatians 6:2, bear you one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. This certainly applies to a board who is concerned about keeping their teachers. Let's remember that the school is God's work. It's not our work. And we need to pray for wisdom, for strength, to fulfill our responsibilities. We want our schools to be a means of passing on the faith. And may God give us grace to be successful in that. Thank you for your attention.